Listening Library presents Facing the Mountain, adapted for young readers. A true story of Japanese-American heroes in World War II by Daniel James Brown. Read for you by Louis Ozawa. For Cats, Rudy, Fred, and Gordon. A word about words. To tell an honest story, a writer must use honest words. As you read this book, I hope you will keep that fact in mind. I certainly have as I have written it. I mention this for several reasons. For one thing, many of the words that have been used for years to talk about the history described in this book are words that were designed to be deliberately dishonest. When the U.S. government announced that tens of thousands of Japanese Americans were to be forcibly removed from their homes, military and political leaders called this an evacuation. They called the fairgrounds and racetracks where Japanese Americans were first confined behind barbed wire assembly centers. They called the process of rounding them up and incarcerating them internment. They called the permanent camps to which Japanese Americans were later moved and where they were held against their will, relocation centers. All of these words were chosen to make what was happening to Japanese Americans sound more acceptable to the American public. I want to call particular attention to that last term. These camps were not relocation centers. They were concentration camps. They were created to concentrate Japanese Americans, based entirely on their race, behind barbed wire in order to separate them from other Americans. So I sometimes refer to the camps with this term. At the same time, it's important to underscore that in using the term concentration camps, I do not mean to compare these American camps to the horrific death camps and slave labor camps created by the Nazis in Germany and Poland during World War II. Those Nazi camps, places like Dachau and Auschwitz-Birkenau, represent an evil that is beyond all imagining. Another part of using language honestly means recognizing when it is racist. In listening to this book, you will occasionally encounter the word Jap. It is a racist term, widely used by millions of Americans during the period of history this book discusses. It was used to hurt and demean both Japanese citizens and Japanese Americans, just as the N-word has been used to hurt and demean African Americans and other black people. It has no place in our society, a society created on the idea and the fact that all people are created equal. It appears in this book only for the purpose of showing honestly how deeply rooted racism against Japanese Americans was during this time in history. Chapter 1. On the beach at Waikiki, swimmers lay towels on the soft coral sand and waded into the turquoise surf. Coffee percolated in sunny kitchens, the yellow blossoms of hau trees opened, and mina birds chattered in the palm trees. All across the island of Oahu, people went about the business of greeting another beautiful Hawaiian day. December 7th, 1941. At first, they looked like swarms of insects drifting across the pale early morning sky. Then they looped around the mountains and spiraled down in groups of five or six. U.S. Navy and Army personnel and civilians alike stopped what they were doing and peered at the sky, all wondering the same thing. What on earth was this? The gray steel and roaring engines of the Japanese warplanes drew nearer. At 7:48 a.m., they struck Kaneeho Bay Naval Air Station, raking the parked aircraft with machine gun fire, setting them ablaze. Then they circled back through billowing clouds of black smoke, strafing anything in their path. Cars racing toward the scene, men scrambling to find cover, even private homes. About 7 minutes later, planes struck other airfields on Oahu. Within minutes, the United States' capability to mount an air defense vanished in a maelstrom of flames, shattered glass, and twisted metal. Then the attackers wheeled their planes around and turned to Pearl Harbor, where 7 battleships were lined up alongside Ford Island, and an 8th was sitting helpless in dry dock. On the USS Nevada, a military band was striking up the Star-Spangled Banner for the 8 a.m. ceremony of raising the American flag. A Japanese bomber roared in and sprayed machine gun fire across the deck, somehow missing the musicians, but shredding the flag halfway up the pole. The band kept playing until the anthem was finished. Then, flinging their instruments aside, they scrambled for cover. On the USS Oklahoma, a sailor roared, "Man your battle stations!" At that very moment, 2 torpedoes punched into the ship's side, and it began to list. Then a 3rd torpedo hit, and the ship rolled over, trapping hundreds below decks. Its great gray hull lay turned to the sky like the belly of a dead whale. At about the same time, 7 torpedoes and 2 aerial bombs hit the USS West Virginia, trapping another 66 men below decks. Within minutes, all 8 battleships and a number of other ships had been hit. Then the worst of it. An armor-piercing bomb penetrated the foredeck of the USS Arizona and detonated perhaps 1 million pounds of explosives stored in its forward hold. A fireball engulfed the ship, and a shockwave pulsed out across Pearl Harbor. Within moments, 1,177 of its crew were dead, nearly half the total death toll for the day. A second wave of 167 planes was now bearing down on the island, and a deadly hailstorm of Japanese bombs and misdirected U.S. anti-aircraft shells fell on residential areas, setting houses on fire, crumpling cars, and taking 49 civilian lives. The planes flew so low that people on the ground could see the faces of the pilots, sometimes stone-faced, sometimes grinning, sometimes even waving as they passed overhead. And those pilots looking down must have noticed that many of the faces staring back up at them in astonishment were very like the faces back home in Japan. In 1941, nearly 1/3 of Hawaii's residents were of Japanese ancestry. In the 1830s, the islands were colonized by white missionaries who established sugarcane and pineapple plantations. Initially, they employed the native Hawaiians, but there were too few of them to meet the needs of the sprawling plantations. So the planters and their descendants began to import labor. The workers were mostly from East Asia, China, the Philippines, Korea, and Japan. By far the largest group was the Japanese. As the horrors of that December day unfolded, these Japanese residents and their American children reacted with the same stunned fury and outrage as other Americans. 17-year-old Daniel Inoue was getting dressed, listening idly to Hawaiian music on the radio, when the announcer, Webley Edwards, broke in with a bulletin, screaming into the mic, "This is no test. This is the real McCoy. Pearl Harbor is being bombed by the Japanese. Get off the streets." Defying the broadcaster's advice, Inoue rushed from his house in Honolulu's Mo'ili'ili neighborhood. He saw the rising sun insignia, the Japanese national emblem, on the wings of a Zero passing overhead, and was immediately overwhelmed by a wave of anger and dread. "I thought my life had come to an end," he later said. But he got on his bike and raced to a first aid station at a nearby elementary school, where he spent most of the next 3 days and nights helping treat the wounded and carrying the dead to the morgue. Katsugo Katz Miho was also getting ready for the day, shaving in his room at his university dorm, when a commotion erupted downstairs. A bunch of fellows yelling.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?